I'm Kristen Stender for Shares, the managing editor of Decor Magazine, and I hope you'll gain lots of valuable insight and ideas in the next hour to take back to your store. We've assembled quite an accomplished panel of six veteran art and framing retailers who are ready to share their strategies for improved customer service. But before we hear from them, I'd like to spend just a couple of minutes giving you an overview of the consumer research survey findings that inspired today's discussion. The mission of the survey was to understand the motivators and barriers to custom framing among today's consumers. The survey participants, screeners chose people who owned or rented or owned a condo or home, ranged in age from 30s to 50s, already had framed art on their walls, and had something framed within the last 5 years, and were likely to have another item custom framed in the future. The survey participants were broken down into six focus groups of 7 or 8 people each, and the discussion centered on the reasons they invest in custom framing and their experience in a custom frame shop. There were a series of interview questions that guided the discussions, including what comes to mind when you hear the words custom framing, what factors contribute to your decision to have something custom framed, do you currently have pieces at home that are waiting to be custom framed, and if so, what's the biggest factor that's delaying the process, and how would you describe the overall in-store experience in a frame shop? And from those responses, an overriding theme emerged that was having an item custom framed celebrates the value a person feels for that piece, whether it's monetary or sentimental. There were really two overriding reasons for framing. One was to honor and celebrate personal memories, accomplishments, and milestones. And the second was to give an item special treatment for presentation or display. Survey respondents revealed a lot about what they want in a custom framer and a custom framing experience. There's really kind of 5 key things that the survey found. One is consumers are looking for confidence in a framer during the design process because they admitted that although they might have an eye for art, they didn't really feel confident in making frame choices. Secondly, they sometimes feel anxious about the ultimate appearance and treatment of their pieces, and they want to be reassured that they will look good upon completion. They want the framer to be a good listener and show that they really care about the item that the person is presenting for framing. Time and money seem to be an issue, kind of an obstacle for custom framing in regards to the frame design that can sometimes cost more than the item being framed and the multiple trips that it takes to kind of get the whole process right. Another obstacle to custom framing was the overwhelming number of choices and the pressure for perfection. So they feel pressure to make the perfect choice given the importance of the item being framed and the cost of having it framed and because it's going to be displayed for everybody to see. And finally, respondents expressed a lack of instant gratification as a hindrance to custom framing. We live in a very fast-paced world and custom framing sometimes requires a little bit of patience to get to the final product. So with all that feedback, we launched the Consumer Experience Series in Decor Magazine, and we've been delivering this information kind of piece by piece, along with insight from contributors and top retailers on how to better serve customers. So we've been doing that in the magazine since June, and we're excited to finally get some live dialogue going on it. So let's get on to our panel. I'd like to introduce to the left of me here, Janet Berry. She is CPF and owner of Frame Masters Gallery in Shelby, North Carolina, which has been in business since 1976. She received her community's Entrepreneur of the Year award, and she writes a regular business column titled What's Up Shopper for the local newspaper, and she's also written for Art and Frame Review. Next to her, we have Stuart Altschlummer. He is CPF and GCF. He is the director and lead educator for Prestige Framing Academy, and he's been in the art framing industry for more than 30 years. Next to Stuart is Lisa Spanos. And Lisa is the president and founder of Art Design Consultants, Inc. in Cincinnati, and she's the winner of the Marketing Excellence Award and Dayforce Top 100 Art and Framing Retail Awards in 2007. She's a 15-year veteran of the art and framing industry who began selling and framing her home, and she's since gained more than 2,000 customers in her current 14,000 square foot location. And next to her is Roy Saper. Roy has owned Saper Galleries and Custom Framing in East Lansing, Michigan for 29 years. He received the award for Best Store Event in Decor's Top 100 Art and Framing Retailer Awards in 2007 for a two-month-long passive exhibit that drew thousands of visitors. I'd also like to point out that Roy has been saving his issues of Decor magazine for the past 30 years, and I think he has one of the biggest collections. Next to Roy is Mary Inden. Mary is the owner of the Gilded Edge Frames and Gallery in Elm Grove, Wisconsin. She's a 20-year veteran of the art framing industry and a winner of several Decor Top 100 awards. And despite the economic downturn, as of lately, her reputation and business sense have given her the ability to open a second location last month. So congratulations to Mary on that. Last but certainly not least, we have Bob Warshauer. And he's been in the art and framing industry for 40 years and a CPF since 1992. He's the owner of Warshauer Custom Picture Frames in Lexington, Massachusetts, and he has definitely a wealth of knowledge on the industry. He told me just this morning that he still has customers that have been around since the very beginning of his business, so definitely shows some loyalty and speaks volumes, I think. So thank you all for joining us today. Appreciate it. And my first question. There are lots of options when it comes to custom framing. Our survey participants indicated that they sometimes feel overwhelmed by the quote-unquote wall of frames. How do you help customers narrow down their choices? And anybody can kind of jump on this and we'll take it from there.
I'll jump. Can you hear us okay? In our gallery, we had the wall of frames for quite a long time and moved to a location that was much smaller and decided that we couldn't have the big wall of frames. So we did two things. We made closets in which all the frames are housed, and just the best Sunday best frames are on the front. But when clients come in and they tell us about their project, we don't run to the frames right away. We'll ask first, not quite 20 questions. But we'll ask where it's going, what it is, how special is it, did they have something in mind? And sometimes they will express the trepidation about what they would pick, and we just tell them that that's why they're here to see us, because we know what to show them when they answer the questions. So we immediately start narrowing the choices just by asking questions.
Okay. One thing that works really well for us, we have the notorious wall of frames. It's about 100 feet long, and there's 9,000 frames on our wall. So I love frames. I love frames so much, and I can't resist having frames up. But it is intimidating when your customers come in and they see massive amounts of frames. I think the first thing that we always do, and this sometimes is difficult, but we try to remember the names of every customer. So anytime I hire someone new, the first thing I say is, look at this person, memorize their face, get to know them, know their name, so the next time they walk in the door, they will feel so important that you've remembered them. So you kind of build a rapport with that customer first, and then you look at what they're bringing in. It's very important that you make a comment, a very positive comment about their artwork, because obviously it's very important to them, they're bringing it in, to have it custom framed. They're not taking it to Target. They're not taking it to, some dinky place down the street. They're bringing it to you for your expertise. So I always make a very positive comment about their artwork. You know, even if I can't stand it, it might be awful or whatever. It might be an old shoe, but it means something to them. So you're always commenting about how interesting, unique, compelling that particular piece is. And then you say, well, here, let me give you a few choice ideas. As you can see, we have many, many frames here. But let me find the perfect frame for you. And then you proceed.
I think it's really what I think Lisa's just saying, it's let them not be intimidated by seeing 2,000 or 9,000 frames, but the years of experience that you have as a picture framer allows you to ask those leading questions, and then based on what we hear, is you pluck off the three or four best options, one could be placed on each of the four corners, and you've automatically narrowed down for that client from several thousand options to the four key ones. And then, of course, readily, you're giving the assurance that you provided, based on what your understanding of their situation is, of their home, the nature of the piece, where it might be displayed, cost issues that they've been suggested to you at the onset, by identifying those four key choices. And then you give them assurance that you will help them through this process so they don't feel that that entire burden, the selection burden, is on their shoulders. You can't lose by narrowing it down and responding to the concerns they express by virtue of the selections that you put on the table.
I've heard some excellent advice from some of the panelists here, all great things to be able to implement at the design counter and when you're working with people. By the way, I think the single most important thing that salespeople, frame designers do when they're working is manage client expectations, making sure that what we're going to deliver is going to be in line with the expectation of the client. And all this questioning and everything goes right to the issue of understanding that so that you can deliver what their expectations are. Having said that, I'm not sure that we've addressed the question about the wall of frames in a way that might be helpful. And I think that I agree with this survey stuff and have some independent data that verifies this as well. In my capacity as a consultant helping people renovate stores and open frame shops over the last 10 years, we've adopted an entirely different philosophy about the retail presentation as opposed to the wall of frames. We still have frame corner samples because that's what we sell in a picture framing business. But I think the customers, the survey has found that the customers find these walls of frames intimidating, overwhelming, and confusing. It's hard for them to understand where one frame stops and the next one starts, because so many of these walls, things are jammed in so tightly that you can't. And so what we've done, and I think we'll be seeing an article that I've written that'll be an upcoming issue of Decor magazine about the implementation of this, has expanded the wall by moving things apart, reducing the number of options that are visibly available while keeping a backup stock. There are several moldings that you have that come in 14 colors in 5 different shapes. And you don't need to have every one of the shapes in every color up on the wall. You need to have it accessible, but not cluttering it. Make the client experience better. We've also integrated samples within the molding wall. And we've integrated silent salespeople. When I say silent salespeople, placards of signage that don't mention molding family names, that doesn't really mean anything to anybody, but talk about the purpose of a fillet or why someone might choose a fabric mat to begin the design process as they're looking. Finally, I think one of the most critical things in making this less intimidating for the retail customer is accessibility. Your clients should be able to touch the molding corner samples. They shouldn't be behind a counter or something like that. Because we've found, and there's empirical evidence to support this, that the more the customers can fondle the product, the higher the sale is.
I have a probably a slightly different problem because of the largest number of my customers are artists. And for a long time I thought, when I first started, that price was the most important aspect. And boy, I don't believe that anymore. In fact, that's the last thing that gets discussed. I subscribe to the, any of you who have taken Vivian Kistler's class, of the ABC method. The art comes first, then worry about the background and the couch. But first deal with the art, and I talk to them about the art. The framer, the artist, and I'm kind of used to dealing with them, and I try to make sure that what I'm talking about is what's going to help them sell their art. that's what they're interested in, at least in my front, in my shop, and the customers that they send me when they're happy, and I got a lot of them, those customers, I deal with the art and talk about increasing their enjoyment of it while they're looking at it. And that's the, that kind of sets off the thing. Also, I have very few samples that are up for anybody to see. There's some golds and a lot of naturals and a few others. And if they say, well, gee, is there anything else? I always have a few that are hidden away that are, quote, special. And those are for the people that are never going to be satisfied, even with 9,000 of them on the wall. And you know that that happens.
But you know what I have to say about the 9,000 frames? I think it's not intimidating. I think it's the wow factor. They come in and they're like, wow, there's anything and everything I could possibly want. Mm. So you've been giving your client tons of options, but you've narrowed it down for them. Because you really can't expect them to do it, because that's when the intimidation process starts, is when they start picking here, picking there. And really, going back to price, when that customer, when you're done working with that customer, and they're so thrilled and excited about what you're doing for them, they're not going to care. They're going to be like, wow. And then you approach the price with, you know what, this price is really good. It could be $1,000 for a frame. But you know what, this price ends up being really good because you got an excellent frame. I mean, you really, and you believe it because, you know, you really believe what you're telling them because you've helped them through the process. And so, you know, that's important.
I want to comment also on something. Christian, you mentioned something about the frame costing more than the art.
Right.
I had somebody come in and to my dungeon and bring me a piece that they had bought in China on a trip, and it cost them 50 cents in China, and they were using that as the cost of that. I said, you forgot. And they said, wait a minute, you forgot the cost to go pick it up.
Well, I'd like to comment about the wall of frames and the 9,000 samples. I wish I had room for that. But we do have room for the customer to come back and touch and feel. And you're right. Once they touch it, it's sold. They love it. And so we're just quite fortunate to have our shop designed like that.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that, Stuart. I'm glad you're reminding me. I do it naturally. Mm-hmm. Hand it to them.
People are talking a little bit about price. If you're designing something, whether it's memorabilia or fine art, and you have built the rapport by using their names, by encouraging them to touch pieces, by showing them different samples, by building the relationship that you have through the years, price should not be an issue. If you get to the end of the line and they're asking about price, somewhere along the line you made a mistake. They didn't get the information they were looking for. Something happened. The train went off the tracks. And the fault is generally yours and not theirs. But having said that, I can't tell you how many times someone will walk into a frame shop, and I think I may be jumping to another question here about the price. Someone walks into the frame shop and they say, I don't want to spend a lot of money. Happens all the time. People come in, and how are you? I don't want to spend a lot of money. What's your name? I don't want to spend a lot of money. And that's a lovely piece. I don't want to spend a lot of money.
Just ignore it.
And exactly. And that's what framers tell me. I can tell you what that means. I'd be happy to translate from customer to English if you'd like. What that really means is, I don't know how much picture framing is supposed to cost. Please don't take advantage of me, because that's what they're saying, and that's what the survey is all about. So when you start to bridge that credibility gap, when you start to gain their trust by working with them, by remembering their name, by showing them examples of the work that you've done, by making your shop customer-centric, focused on the customer, it's about the customer. If you have to strain a little bit to get the molding you want, but it sells more stuff because they can see it better, do a little more exercising and do the strain, because that's the way businesses run, then these issues start to go away. The price issue just fades into the background.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that, too. Good feedback. Any other comments? My second question, some of our survey respondents expressed anxiety over a lack of knowledge of their custom framing options. Do you have any informative displays, sales strategies, or other ideas on how to inform them?
We have some excellent tools in East Lansing, Michigan, and I'll say one of the best tools is on the Exhibit 4 right now, and that, of course, is the TrueView display. If you're selling glass and you don't have one of the TrueView displays, you're missing out not only on the revenue aspect, but you're missing out on selling yourself and selling a variety of products that every framer should have. What we have are examples about everything. If you have a canvas, we'll show you floater frames. We'll show you canvases in floater frames on display in the wall. Another thing to show your framing customers is how the work of art is actually in there. I'm sure that there are customers that believe that we either put some kind of sticky something behind the artwork, or that mat is, the purpose of the mat is to use pressure with the glass to hold the sucker in place. So the best thing you can do is sell the technique, and what you're doing is giving them knowledge, and the greatest advantage of that beyond showing them how you actually hinge a work of art onto a backing board is you're selling yourself. So by sharing knowledge, you're selling yourself at the same time. So the first thing one has to do is have the TrueView displays, which work magical wonders, as everyone who has museum glass displays, because every week or so they wipe off the little dotted fingerprints from people testing out to see if there really is glass there. Have a hinge display. Have a face mat in your backing board and a small work of art hinged at the top with your mulberry hinges. Open the mat and then dangle it forward so they can see that the artwork, in fact, is not masking taped along four edges, but that you actually hinge it using a mulberry paper or maybe methyl cellulose that you mix right there. When you show them the techniques that you employ with actual samples, then they can better understand why this thing is going to cost $300 or $200 rather than, what was the term the person looking for, just make it inexpensive, right? I don't want to spend much. So use the resources that you have in your back shop to make the samples, present those samples that sells the technique, it explains the technique, and by virtue of your taking the time to explain all that goes into creating this framing sandwich, you've also sold yourself.
At our gallery, we have a hybrid. Who has a frame shop? No art. Do you all one? Everybody else is kind of a hybrid. You sell art and framing as well. We have a hybrid. We sell art and we sell framing. And early on in the, we opened in 88, so early on it was a lot of posters and prints and some limited editions. And over the years we've evolved and now we have original oils and serigraphs and all kinds of other fancy things. But what I used to have one of the samples for museum glass that was made by the manufacturer. And in a kind of a mini disaster, we lost everything. And so I decided, well, I'll make my own sample. And what we did was we took four copies of the same print, and two of them we matted with black mats and French matting, raised mats, all kinds of fancy stuff on both, used the same frame on both, but on one we used regular glass and on the other we used museum glass. We don't sell conservation clear, we don't sell non-glare. We chose to limit what kind of stock we would keep in our back room. So we keep museum glass, TrueView, anti-reflective, and regular. And we just felt that those were the choices that showed the art the best. And felt that by not having to have so many choices in the back room, it would keep my costs in line. So when I'm designing for my client, we get through the matting and the frames and all of that, and I usually say then, well, the next choice, the last choice, is what kind of glass you want. And I take them to this wall where we have the two pictures hanging right above each other. The black mat is nice because it really shows a lot of reflection. So So they see the difference between regular glass and the museum glass, and then we explain that the anti-reflective looks the same as museum, and we talk about a little bit of a price difference. Right next to those two, the other two prints that I ordered are framed. One is a canvas transfer with the texture and the canvas and everything. And the last one is a print guard, which is a product that you may, if you have a hot press, you probably can do that. It's a laminate that we use quite often in applications for teenagers' bedrooms or an office, because it has UV blocking qualities, and if the kids are shooting buckets in their bedroom, it's not going to fall off the wall and break the glass. So by having those four pieces right next to each other, I can cover a lot of options, and I also am educating the client at the same time to not just make a choice, but these are some of the other things that we offer at our gallery. We also have displays. Larson Jewel has a beautiful display on water gilding, and they show the 6 or 7 or 8 steps in this beautifully framed piece. And that, whether it's a Larson Jewel that's water gilded or some of the other Close Corners companies, having that display explains the cost for a lot of the more high-end frames. I think anytime you have a display, you do need to use it. You do need to have it in the room and ready to show clients. And as they're wandering around the room, they can see these options that are available. So some of our pictures in the gallery are canvases, but we scatter around the room pictures that have museum glass or AR glass on it. So when they're making this choice, I'll turn around and say, well, do you see the picture of the portrait over there that does have glass on it? And immediately they'll go up and, oh, I guess it does, you know. So it does help, even though it's, you know, it's costly for us to have those dollar bills hanging on the wall. You do need to show that you believe in that stuff, that you do use museum glass on your art pieces in your gallery.
One thing that I found too is we all know non-glare glass, right? We all use it. It's pretty awful stuff. It's hazy, kind of distorts the art. I find that having a display of non-glare right along, you know, on the side, on the tribute where you see the museum, you see the regular, and you see the non-glare, it helps sell the other two props, the museum glass. It helps sell that. So having something that's truly awful will help you sell the higher priced, better glass because there's such a huge difference. So it's okay to have, you know, even we just so rarely sell. I mean, I'm in the stock market, but I show it as a sample.
We just tell people that we never did sell it and we don't keep it in stock.
And
because
I tell,
it does distort.
Yeah, and I tell people, yeah, look at it. Yes. It's yeah. Proof right there, and they're like, you bet, I won't do it.
I'm sure most of them won't do it. Yeah.
So it's good to have it because it sells everything. You know, it's the better product.
Over the last 5 years, I've worked with clients to open approximately 20 small frame shops scattered across the United States. 19 out of 20 have a large screen television framed and on the wall, and something is always playing on it, and it's very rarely Disney. It's what do we play on the television? Well, we play stuff that shows a PowerPoint, self-running PowerPoint presentation that shows examples of the work that we've done. And the hundreds of things that through the years are build and comprise the portfolio of interesting projects that every frame shop has done in all of the years that you've done this. And when someone comes in and they have a particular treasure, family heirloom or something that they'd like you to handle, they're concerned about technique, they're concerned about care in something, if they just waiting their turn to talk to the frame designer, see two or three similar kinds of projects go by, it's an impressive display. That's not the only thing we show on television. I have three clients who have actually recorded the process of framing pieces. And so rather than the presentation that you suggest with the hinge, they actually can see about 45 seconds of someone doing that, and someone cutting a light of glass, and someone cutting a frame, and doing these different things. So they see the different processes. We made a decision to use word slides as opposed to narrated because we didn't want the same audio loop running over and over and over, not for our sanity, but for the sanity of the clients that were there. And every one of them says, please ask to see these samples if you have questions, and we'd be happy to show them. So it takes one step further, the samples that you have, and it allows you to be doing something else, waiting on another client, while still having your molding wall, your walls or your display space, your retail space. It creates something that's engaging, that's compelling, and that's informative. Retail in the 21st century is experiential. People actually are expecting a positive experience when they come into your store, not simply to go over to a shelf and get a box of Cheerios. When we do these things, we go a long measure toward creating the experience that people are looking for.
Okay. My third question. The survey revealed that consumers sometimes feel anxious or nervous about the ultimate appearance and treatment of the pieces. They want to know they can trust the framer. How do you promote your experience and ensure customers that their art or memorabilia is in good hands?
Okay. On this one. Well, we've been in business since 1976, so we do have a reputation of doing good work. And we have a portfolio. Almost every piece of art that comes through that place gets photographed with the client as they're picking it up, and we keep this portfolio. I have a big piece of glass on a table, and we change these pictures regularly, so they're not old, but you can look through the portfolio and you can see some from years past. And that has just been a real good selling tool for us.
I think we also have to toot our own horn of sorts when we have achievements. When you've been certified, you have a CPF after your name or that of your staff, that has to be touted. Longevity, as I think reported in most recent Decor magazine, is also something worth noting. And it sounds like we've got an average of 20 to 35 or so years on this panel, and I'm sure, and I know we have that for many out in the audience, but when you've been around for a long enough time, you have had success. I think it's important to recognize that our customers, our clients, want to hear about that success. If you're doing work at the local university, or noteworthy clients that you don't have to mention by name, but if it's the governor of the state or the president of the university, or if you're selected by the major industry in town to do all their corporate framing, you've done other jobs where you don't have to necessarily name an individual due to some client confidentiality concerns, mention what you are doing, the volume of activity. Not I did $30,000 this month, but that you are called upon by. Make some connection with that client. If they're from a certain neighborhood, a certain street, or a neighboring city, you can even point to the fact that you've provided similar assistance or similar type works to others. When somebody brings in Chinese cutouts or Japanese woodcuts or almost anything you can think of, because anything that somebody's brought in, you've worked on a similar project for other clients in the past. So I think the more you point to those experiences that you've had, the more you're reconnecting with your own new client, and they're saying in their mind that this, I have some comfort level, and it's presented to them in a subliminal way, but the association of their project with ones you've done in the past says you're in good hands by leaving your artwork here at our frame shop.
I think there are two or three other things that can reassure clients when they come in with their piece. You can almost tell how precious it is by how they carry it in. You know, so your handling it as a precious thing is just a body English indication to them that you are going to handle this beautifully for them. We tell people when they ask, well, you know, I've heard that this needs special treatment. And so we will tell them that everything we do in our shop is conservation quality. And it's true. We only keep acid-free conservation ray mats. We, you know, everything is conservation quality. And that's why many times we recommend the museum glass, because it's the best thing for what their project is. And then when you're working on the process, you know, you don't want to be putting the frame sample with the Velcro thing on top of the art and stuff. You know, you want to make sure that you show respect and care for the paper or whatever it is that you're working on. I think, like you were saying, right, you explained that we've done many of these crocheted stars before, and yes, we stitch and all of that kind of thing. And then after it's over, before they leave, trust me, they're going to be watching what you do with that. They've paid the bill, or you've given them their receipt, and you walk over and you go like that, they're going to get real nervous all over again. So protecting the art, doing what you would do to make sure that it's safe, and letting them see you carry that precious thing off to the storage place that you're going to keep it for safekeeping, will encourage them to trust that you know what you're doing.
I'm going to make a wild leap of faith and assume everybody has perfect art handling techniques, that we all know how to handle the art, and we're all going to do the right thing with that. Having said that, I think that one of the most important things in conveying a measure of trust to your potential clients is professionalism. Act in a professional fashion. I recently walked into a shop while doing a market evaluation. I had something to frame, was sort of a secret shopper kind of thing, and the design counter was completely cluttered. There were catalogs, there were mat board samples, lots of different things all over the counter. And they said, oh, no place for me to put the piece down. They said, oh, don't worry, we'll just clear some things off. And a big arm went right across the table. Okay, it wasn't quite that bad. But what they did was they took everything that was on the table and moved it to the floor next to the table. And I felt like saying to them, and the next person that's going to come in is going to put my piece on the floor, right? You don't get a warm feeling when a vendor does that. And that's just a matter of professionalism. You should have adequate workspace. The workspace should be well lit. It should be clean. It should be always kept ready for the next job coming in. Your people should be appropriately dressed. And all of these things can convey a professional approach and give people the confidence that you know what you're doing. Had someone who put an ad in the paper that added up all of their experience of their staff. And they said, there was a picture of a guy, you know, Father Time from the New Year's thing. We have 301 years of experience on staff. And all that did was bring chuckles, but nobody cared. We frame for museums, so that means your prices are expensive. They care how you work with their pieces. And when Mary says, handle it gently, do the right things, but also, before they get in, what they see should be representative of the way in which you approach your business. That professionalism goes a long way to winning clients.
And I also love to see a first-time client come in when we bring the gloves out, put those cotton gloves on to handle their artwork. I love to see the expression on their face. It's just, it's priceless.
Okay, great. We live in a fast-paced society. You know, consumers are used to instant gratification purchases. Have you found ways to expedite the turnaround time for your customers' orders? And if not, are there ways that you keep them informed during the process? How so?
I think one of the best things we can do is, before they leave, know exactly when they need it. Mm-hmm. So the leading question we ask them, first I'll indicate the question we never ask. The question we never ask is, when do you need it? When would you like it? Because they always want it as soon as possible. And those are the ones that you rush to get done, and you're calling them 3 months later, asking if they remember they left something here three months ago. So the question we ask is there a specific event or a date of a specific event for which it's needed? And usually they give you a blank look, and they they shrug their shoulders and say, no, just anytime. So what they've automatically done is given you permission to take the full 2 weeks that you maybe would indicate is the normal turnaround, but if you needed it in advance of that for a specific occasion or date, that you'd assure them that you'd have it done by that date. So what we never do is give someone a progress report along the way that says we're still working on it, because that suggests that we've reminded them that we still have it and it's not done yet. But by asking them if they have that specific date for which it's needed, and they give you a specific date, we'll always indicate on a record that it has to be done by at least one day ahead of that time. We also do call our people, though, when, of course, there's something back ordered or there's an issue where another alternative frame might want to be considered if there is something that's needed for a certain date.
We sell a lot of double up, triple up, quadruple up framing, a fillet from one company, mats from whatever, and two or three frames outside or whatever. And they're never, of course, the same company. So if something's coming from California and something else from New Jersey and two things from Chicago, which is great, but because I'm in Milwaukee. But it's difficult to tell a client that they'll get it in 10 days or something. So we actually have extended out our suggested or probable due date to 2.5 to 3 weeks. Now, when we finish it in 2 weeks, we look like goddesses. You know, we look like we've just performed a miracle. The hardest part is when we have sold two or three items that are going to all go together, and the middle one is either discontinued or on back order for 2 months. And it brings up another issue that I was going to touch on, is to give them what you think is the expected time that it will actually take, but add a couple days so you've got a little bit of leeway. The other thing is to be sure to put your orders through your computers. Everybody's got a computer with a computer framing program on it, I would assume. If I'm assuming wrong, I'm sorry. If you don't, go do it right now. There's a bunch of vendors out there. But you, if you put your order through into the computer Monday through Friday before, 4 o'clock Central Time, you can find out if it's even in the computer. If it's not in the computer, if it comes up, numbers not available, it's either such a new sample and you haven't updated yet, or it's probably discontinued. And that's the option that you have while your client is still in the shop. How many times have you said, okay, I'll call you with the estimate, or you've written up the order, and then on Monday, from the Friday you took the order, you find out when you try to call in the order that that molding was discontinued 3 months ago, and they have nothing left in stock.
Or 3 years ago.
3 years. Yeah. So use your instincts. You know, if you're doing a really complicated thing, number one, make sure you price it all at the same time. And I know I'm just off the topic a little bit, but these are just hints. And I always tell my employees, well, how do I know this? How do I know to worry about this? Think of the worst thing that can happen and then fix it so it doesn't. If you've got more than one frame to order for one thing, call and make sure that they're all available while your client's there. Because when they go home and a day and a half or a week and a half later, when you find out you can't get that thing, you've got to try to get them to come back and believe that you're still an expert and that you have the best stuff available. I had one employee who would insist on saying that she had picked, this is the ever most perfect thing for your picture and you're going to love it. Well, I can't tell you how many times that ever most perfect thing was on back order for 4 weeks and they needed it in 2 for a party. And we had to call and say, geez, could you pick something not ever so most perfect? People don't want to do that. You know, this is lovely. This will really enhance your art. Don't use the word it's perfect, because it's not if you can't get it in the time that that client wants it, or you can't get it at all.
One thing that I do, I work a lot with designers, and I don't know if you've all worked and dealt with designers, but they want their framing yesterday.
Yeah.
They're very demanding. We actually stock molding. We have, you know, I follow the trends and what's happening in design, and I have a selection of in stock molding, silvers, golds, blacks, the most popular moldings. I buy them in box quantities, saves us some money. And if someone comes in and says, I need this job done quickly, we go directly to the in-stock molding wall. And that's very visible, and we know, we keep track of how much of that molding we have, and we can guarantee that we can get their molding when they need it. Because the worst thing ever is turning away a client, mm-hmm. is having them walk out the door without an order. So if there's a way that, any way that you can avoid that, it's worked for us, the in-stock molding. So it's worth,
I agree with that. If there's any way that you've got any warehouse space at all, I highly recommend that you do stock the basics. And also glass, mat board, foam board, just any of the basics if you have room for it or can make room.
Well, we've got 10 minutes left and I have 3 questions, so in the interest of time, an hour is not enough. In the interest of time, I'm just going to ask 2 more. So my next one. Survey respondents indicated that they equate custom framing with other big-ticket home improvements, so there's this pressure for perfection that exists. How do you assure them that they've selected the
perfect.
I think reputation, if you have a good reputation in your industry, clients understand that. Most clients, I think, rely on recommendations. There are these companies that have lists like where not to go. I wish they had lists where you should go. In the Milwaukee area, there's a thing called Angie's List. Supposedly you can call her with good or bad things, I'm not sure, but I think if you have treated your clients well, spoiled them rotten, as we say, and they feel like the Queen of Sheba when they're in your store, I think they're going to have confidence that you are interested in their welfare and that the things that you're showing them and selling them are for their benefit, not yours. If you come out and say, well, this is my best seller ever, I'm sure you've had sales reps come into you trying to sell you samples and things or pictures, and they say, well, this is the best seller in Cincinnati. But you know what? I live in Milwaukee. It isn't Cincinnati, So, those are not the kind of sales techniques you use to sell something to your client. Reassuring them that the framing that you've helped them select is what the client indicated to you they wanted, and do they think that it's what they were looking for? Is it in their price range? If someone comes in and they do say, I don't want to spend a whole lot, I approach it from that angle. They don't want to spend a whole lot. So I do not go to the closed corners or Roma or Larson Jewel. I will start with Omega and Decor and some of the medium end. I will also show them some of those, but I will show them what they asked for first to prove to them that I can give them what they've asked for. I'll tease them and I'll tempt them. I've been known as the temptress of Elm Grove. But if they don't want to spend that money, don't make them, because honest to God, they will never come back if you push, and they'll be too embarrassed to say, that's too much money, I can't spend that, or I don't want to spend it. They will maybe pay the bill and never come back. They'll pay the bill and tell everybody how expensive I was, or they'll just turn and walk. Neither one of those 3 options is acceptable to my business.
How many of your customers say you don't charge enough?
A couple.
I've got one. And I'm not going to raise my prices to her just arbitrarily. I'm just going to keep on giving her better quality and better performance and keep a good customer. Mm-hmm. I've got one artist customer who got to the point where she's very stuck and just hands it to me. So I need it for a show and so time. Your taste's good enough. You know exactly what to do with it. Make sure it looks good. And they know that I know what they're trying to do with their arm. the same thing that you're trying to do with what you're selling in your shop. They want to sell. And so you got to work with them.
I think when you say to a customer, our job as framers is to share our years of experience and help guide you to a decision that you're going to be most comfortable with, taking into consideration your specific situation, your tastes, your likes, your dislikes, but really to put a safety net under you to ensure that you won't make mistakes, is something that's very comforting to the retail customer. Having said that, if you're working with a client and you frame a big job, or a little job for that matter, and they're unhappy with the result, it's incumbent upon a retailer to make the customer happy in whatever way you have to. And when you do that, you further enhance your reputation, which carries on from one customer to the next. That's, I think, the part and parcel of why people were willing to spend the money that it costs for custom framing, as opposed to going to any of the places where they can have alternate framing options.
Great. We'll kind of skip to my last question here. And some of you have already touched on this a little bit, but as you said, consumers sometimes aren't sure what to expect when it comes to the cost of custom framing. Do you have any way of giving customers just a ballpark idea of what their order might cost before the sales or design process?
Yeah, this comes up a lot with my customers, or at least with that one segment. And what I'll do is take a standard number that I've got, one of a group of moldings that is almost appropriate, and say, well, for molding of this quality and with this one mat, et cetera, I would my standard work where this will cost about. And I make sure that it's a number that they can't quite reach by using those. And then when they pick something, and well, I really don't like that molding. I like this one. I know it'll be a little bit more. And gee, it comes out either the same or sometimes even less. We all know how the quirks of moldings can go. That's fine. They go away happy. But if you tell them this is going to cost you $13.98, first of all, they're not going to believe you. And I give them an exact figure, just as an estimate, I give them a ballpark, and I make sure that if it's 10 or 15% more than what I really think it's going to cost, that's fine. They'll be happy. They'll say, well, and then they say, well, how come it came out less? I said, well, I got a good buy on the molding, and you get the savings. You didn't get a good buy.
35 years ago, we took 5 copies of the same print, I think it was a botanical, and framed it 5 different ways. And if the average price per frame sold in our shop at that time was $100, the least expensive of the 5 ways was $120, and the most expensive was $400 or $500, and each one had a placard with the price and with the techniques that were employed clearly displayed. We didn't use a large piece because people here in North America have already been trained intellectually and emotionally to realize that if you want to supersize your drink and fries, it's going to cost you more money. So we kind of cheated back a little bit on the size, but people would look up and they would frequently point to these samples and say, can I have my piece framed like that, only in blue and with that frame? Absolutely. But they just bought off on about what that's going to be. Price might be a little more, and that says $295. You tell them it's going to be $365. Your piece is a little bit bigger. Oh, I guess it is. And they've already bought off on that. And what the intent of that is to overcome the sticker shock. Not to deal with the issues of value, but rather to identify for people who don't know what to expect what neighborhoods we're talking about. Because you can spend $2 for a picture frame, and you can spend $20,000 for a picture frame, The greatest likelihood is you're not going to spend either one of those on the next frame that you buy. It's a pretty wide thing. We did that 35 years ago in our retail store. 20 years ago, I wrote an article about it. Maybe it's time for another one.
I think so. I'll take the hint. Go ahead.
When people come in and they say, well, how much do you think this is going to cost? I have no clue. We have tons of samples, too. I have no clue what they're going to pick. You know, so it's kind of a leading question. But usually if it's something like this, I'll say, well, you're going to start out at whatever, 200, 250, 100, you know, something like this. Well, probably 100, 150 is where you're going to start. And we can, you know, from whatever you pick, it can go up from there. And they at least have, oh, well, I was only going to, I thought I could spend $25, and it's just being truthful, not leading them on, but I do tell them, this is where we're going to start. I don't have anything memorized, but that's why I have a computer, and we do estimates all the time. So why don't we start looking at a few things, and let's see where we go with this. The other thing I do talk about is that everybody, and I say it just like this, everybody has a budget. If they drive up in a Mercedes or a Chevy, everybody's got a budget. They're just different budgets. So when people ask about it, we also can use the phrase, did you have a budget in mind for this project? And they'll say, oh, it's for my kid and it's for his dorm room and school and I just didn't want to spend anything. Well, let me show you about this laminate that we have, and we have a really nice looking but economical metal frame. If he throws a basketball at it, it's not going to break. So if you address their concerns, something about the money issue was important to them if they ask you when they walk right in. So answering it as openly as you can, but then suggesting that you can still try and help them, it will normally help keep that sale in your store.
But very often when you start the way you did, you end up writing a much bigger ticket than
yes.
you figured you were going to.
Yes. Yeah.
Because what you said you're doing is addressing their concern. Their concern, as Sue had said earlier, isn't how much is it going to cost. It's treat me fairly.
Mm-hmm.
Our approach seems to be just a little slightly different. We've all received the phone calls from someone, and you know exactly what they're going to say as soon as the first few words come out of their mind. What they're asking is, I have a, and that means they have a 24 by 36 poster, and they want a black metal frame. How much will that cost? This is what we don't do. We don't go to the computer and type all the specs in and answer with how much it would cost. Because as you know, there are way too many variables. It's like asking, going to a restaurant and say, how much will the meal cost? With or without potato, with or without salad, with or without all the other accessories. What we do is this, we make it easy. Think about, firstly, what is the question they're really asking? Their question that they're really asking is, do I go to your business or I go to the next person in the phone book's business? So to answer the question, what we do is we indicate clearly that we can frame that, it could be $100, it could be $300. But we can make it in a frame range or frame it for a price in whatever range you're looking to have it framed in. Then right away you've given them a sense of assurance. There's that sense of relief on their part that says, this guy hears me. What he's saying to me is, no matter what my budget is, he's probably going to find a solution. Will it be using a placket or a laminate product? Which might be $50, or as indicated, you could go much higher. So what we do is we are acknowledging to them that the price of framing this, and this is the question was asked before we get into the design phase or the sales process, it's effectively like asking how much does a house cost or a car cost or a couch cost, because it can be in such a broad range. So the best way to answer that question, it's not, in my judgment, though we can have different experiences that work better for some of us than others, but not give them an answer with the dollar sign and the decimal point, but rather give them a price range that you feel is followed up with enough that gives them a sense of assuredness or confidence that you can handle the work and you can do it for them in the price range that they're likely going to want. And then what we do always is we invite them we ask them if they're from the local area, in most cases they are, they'll usually say, yeah, they happen to be two blocks from you, which means of course they'll come in. But we invite them to bring the work in, and then we acknowledge to them that we can share with them the broad range of styles of framing and glass and other types, which would better refine the specific price for the options selected. It always works.
Okay, well that's all the questions I have. We've gone a little bit over, but I want to open it up to you if you have any questions for the panel, and you can take one or two, and then I'm sure the panel will hang out for a couple minutes and you can come up here and chat a little bit. So, does anybody have any questions?
Oh, come on.
Do you deliver your art and framing to the customer?
We do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We'll hang it also.
Yeah, and also, that posed a very interesting question because it gives you another selling opportunity.
Yeah.
So, let's say you deliver a piece after it's framed, and by the way, you've got another wall that mm-hmm. could use something. Or that piece, I noticed that frame is really not quite right for this room. So if you're there with a client, you've already built up that rapport and that trust, and you're in the house, they will listen, and they would, it's just a wonderful opportunity to do more with them.
Yeah, if they invite you into their home to do that, you have become endeared to them. Mm-hmm. They trust you. Just whatever you say is just, they think you're great, especially when you're hanging it on their wall, and they don't have to fight with their husband.
And that works with corporate, too. I don't know.
Oh, it does.
Are there a lot of people that do corporate? Because we do a lot of corporate. And you end up delivering a piece for a corporation. Oh, by the way, we've got 12 other pieces here that need to be framed. Can you do that too?
Oh, yes.
So, it works both ways with a residential and a corporate client. So it's always nice. And they feel so good. Mm-hmm. They feel like, they've taken the time to come over here. And again, they're not going to get that from the big boxes. They're not going to get that kind of service anywhere else. They're going to think about you.
We don't always wait for the delivery to take advantage of that opportunity. We offer house calls when the clients come in, and usually they're looking around, and a lot of times, but not always, it's the first visit, but they'll, the greeting and stuff, and then finally you find out that they're looking for something for their dining room, and usually I'll ask where they are from, and then we say that we do offer a house call. The first house call is free. We would come out to your home and we'll measure, we can check for color, we will take digital photographs of the rooms that you're thinking of, and then we'll come back here and we'll pre-select some of the art based on what you've told me. So when we go to the house call, we have a little bag, no paper, tape measure, digital camera, a business card, and so on, and take the photographs, schmooze, as we say. A lot of times while you're in the home, you can kind of segue into, are there any other areas that you might be thinking of in the future? And I could just take a couple pictures of those too, and then I'll have them in your file when you come to see me. And of course, then we have to have a file, and everybody thinks they're really important if they're in a file, right? So when we come back to the gallery, then we make an appointment, we find the art kind of that they're looking for. I will usually print out on 8x10 glossy paper those pictures of those bare walls, because then I'll have that out there when they come in for their appointment, and I'll say, do you remember now on the fireplace mantle you had those candlesticks? Well, I think if we move the candlesticks to the other side, then this picture will fit better, and on and on and on. And they just can't believe that I strategized for them. The other thing is, you're right about when you're in there and you have any kind of experience in looking at magazines and other houses you've been in, you can see when things are out of place or poorly, the scale is wrong. And you come into the foyer and you see this tiny little mirror over this big chest, and they thought they were doing something great because they saw it in a magazine. And you can say, that mirror is just
out of scale, and scale is really an important part of design. How about if we move that mirror to that narrow wall where it'll look like it is the perfect scale, and then you have room for that picture that you were admiring back at the gallery. I could bring that over next week and we could try it up there. Mm-hmm. So you do get this, double, triple, quadruple design and selling opportunity by getting into their house. And it does really create that relationship, which is the most important part of any selling that you do, is that relationship.
So what percentage of your sales are done in the home?
Oh my gosh. In the home per se, I would say they'll agree to it, but if you're talking about the cash exchange,
you visited their house.
Yeah, it's a little high. I would say 20%, 20 to 30% off of house calls. And we'll do the initial house call, and believe me, from then on, they are your clients unless you blow it big time.
So you got 100 customers. How many of their homes have you been to?
Probably 30.
So you close about 65% of them.
Yes, you will close a lot. It's like we also do on trial when people come into the gallery and we haven't been to their home and they want to see, we encourage people checking things out. The spouse isn't there, they're not sure about the color, and I'll tell them, your colors are not anything like the colors of carpeting or furniture in my gallery. Why don't you take these three home and talk to me next Wednesday? So maybe this is Tuesday. Oh my God, they can actually have it for a week or whatever. I have to give credit to a gentleman whose seminar I went to my first year in business. He called it puppy dog selling. When did anybody take a puppy dog home and bring it back? Rare, really rare. If you've narrowed down their selections to listening, if you're listening to what they're looking for, and they're looking at some things that are, oh, I love that one, but I'm not sure that one might be the better size, send them all. You know what? Because they're going to love that one, but maybe it's the wrong size, but maybe while they're walking around, that might fit in the family room instead of the living room. You might sell two or three of those instead of maybe just one.
So if you went to more homes, would you sell more art and furniture?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, you will sell more.
And you don't do that because...
I'm sorry?
And you don't hire people to do that because...
All of my people do that.
Yeah.
Every one of my
people. My question is, if you hired more people, would you get more business?
You got to get the leads.
You still have to have leads. Now, we work with builders and interior designers, so we do have some leads. But I will say, honestly, this has been a really not great last 12 to 16 months. Even in Milwaukee, which hardly has any of this stuff going on economically, it's been slow to build. Everywhere in the country, building is slow. A builder that I've worked with for 20 years, he's been doing a parade of homes model for 23 years. He's a major winner almost every year. This is the first year in 23 years he did not do a parade of homes model. And I could almost count on that model as a major showcase for my stuff. So it's the economy, stupid. It's just really the economy this year. But don't give up, because if you don't have that service now and you add that service, it should give you a boost.
I'm glad you took the questioning to the level that you did, because it allows me to point out, and we have an example. We started to brag about the fact, a particular client, that we did delivery and installation. We didn't start doing delivery and installation. We'd been doing delivery and installation for quite a period of time. But we saw a dramatic increase in business when we made people aware, potential clients, aware of the fact that delivery and installation was available. By promoting it in marketing materials, whether they be web-based, Yellow Pages ads, newspaper, flyers, whatever it was, this became available, business increased. Why did you come to us? Oh, I saw that you do delivery and installation. I was really concerned I could do this. Measurable numbers. The interesting thing was, didn't matter if we charged for delivery and installation, still an increase. Because with this particular client, there were two stores, and in one store, two different areas. In one store, we chose to charge for delivery and installation, and the other one, we didn't. Both stores had an increase. And both stores had previously done delivery and installation. So it wasn't about the service, it was about promoting it. When you promote it, now all of a sudden, maybe after promotion, we can hire some more people and get into more homes and do that type of thing.
How important are in-store and gallery events to establishing and enhancing relationships with clients?
I think it's about the most important thing you can have. We have significant events that we'll spend years in producing, and we'll send the invitations to maybe 7,000 clients. So instead of having an event every month, we'll space them out and make it a big event, and about everyone plans on going. This whole panel has been about consumer experience. And one of the best way of developing a relationship, a true consumer experience, is inviting somebody to a special event, and they know you're going to serve something, so they'll probably be there. And then if it's promoted as something noteworthy as it is, noteworthy meaning it's a once or twice a year type event in terms of its scale and relative importance, rather than another invitation for another thing that's always the first Sunday or the final Friday or the third Thursday, whatever it would be. I think it's highly important to have those events. Another reason is you're sending an invitation. If you're sending an invitation, an announcement for a specific event, particularly if there's a talk involved, a walking tour is what we often have at our gallery, people will be there because it's a relatively rare opportunity and you're building a relationship. The best thing we can do to foster the consumer experience is to build relationships. Having events in our galleries or frame shops is one of the best ways. In a frame shop, you could have an exhibit of what Milwaukee hangs on their walls or what Myrtle Beach is displaying this month, and you can contact your customers over the past 6 months and invite them to participate in a show. So you're inviting each of them, and of course they will all invite all the people they know for this maybe one weekend or maybe even a night affair of what Milwaukee hangs on their walls or what Milwaukee collects or whatever your city is. There are too many events that we can create for our own galleries, and they'll always be successful in bringing in. What better way to create the consumer experience? Excellent question.
I think your idea about not being so predictable, in Milwaukee they have a gallery walk, I believe it's 4 times a year. And years ago my husband and I would always go, we're gallery junkies, and people would be walking around with packages that they had purchased. It's so routine now and so expected. We go and people are going from cocktail, wine glass, cheese plate to the next room and gallery and cheese plates, and they have dinner on Friday night on gallery night, you know, on all of the galleries. And it's a small area of the downtown in Milwaukee, but it's gotten to be expected. The gallery owners are not giving unexpected things. It's like one artist per gallery. If you don't care for that artist, you kind of walk in the door, grab some cheese cubes, and walk out again. You know, it doesn't generate purchasing. It doesn't generate commerce. It generates a fine idea of dinner together. So I think doing the unexpected and not routine every month or every whatever, making it a special thing with special invites is a good idea.
Indeed. This Sunday is Grandparents' Day, a holiday completely contrived by a greeting card company to make more money. I mean, there's your event, and there's a perfect... By the way, Mother's Day, sorry ladies, was created by the Hallmark Greeting Company to sell more greeting cards, along with support from the chocolate factories to sell more chocolates. We have an encyclopedia that we found online, and we will happy to share this information with you, that will tell you all of the different days that today is, or any other day that you want. And so I think January 13th is Tom Thumb Day. Invite people to your shop to frame miniatures on Tom Thumb Day. So you can create excitement and event stuff anytime you want using some of these non-traditional kinds of tools. But that's about marketing, not about experience.
Good advice nonetheless. Okay, well, I want to thank everybody for coming, and I especially want to thank our terrific panel here for the very good insight, and I want to encourage you to continue reading the series of the magazine every month and to visit our website, www.bayhorrormagazine.com, where we will continue to have more information about the survey, and you can have the opportunity to kind of give us some of your insight as well. So thank you very much for coming, and thank you to our panel.
Thank you.